This is Mitch McGarry of the Oklahoma City Thunder, and you're listening to the Down to Dunk Podcast.
Welcome to the Down to Dunk Podcast. This is your host, Andrew Schlecht, and with me today, the biggest Waiters hater that I know, Alex Spears. Alex, how you doing?
Hey!
Basically, all we're going to talk about today is Dion Waiters. We're going to break down his regular season, his playoffs, his future contract, and what that means for Oklahoma City cap-wise. And then if there is a replacement for him, or like what does it look like if they let him go? So, Alex, let's first talk about his regular season. And maybe this is the kind of the center of like the hate for Dion Waiters. And just the idea that he's a crappy player. Let's talk about that first.
Yeah, well, I remember at the beginning of the season, I really didn't have a strong opinion on Dion, and he got off to an incredible start.
Yeah.
And kind of looked like the two guard of the future. And at that point, it was kind of like, wow, I guess, yeah, I mean, if he's going to play this is pretty awesome. And then he pretty much fell off a cliff for at least another month, mm-hmm. if not longer. And it got to the point where it was, I mean, I had already written an article about Kyle Singler, and there were points in the season where I was close to writing an article about Dion Waiters because it had gotten that bad and I felt like the stats were funny enough. But then he kind of stabilized, and then in my opinion, he just became like a very like average at best player. And then the playoffs happened, and it was really insane. And I still don't think his playoffs were like as amazing as we think they were.
Yeah.
But I do think his defense was legit.
Yes.
Specifically his ability to switch, which came up sort of big against the Spurs. I mean, his defense against the Spurs was more the fact that he was able to play Kawhi straight up.
Right.
Over short stretches. But the him against the Warriors, just the fact that he could switch onto Draymond and they weren't getting killed was pretty incredible because there just aren't that many guys who could do that. And it's not like he's exceptionally tall, you know, he's 6'4", but he's built like a brick. Dude's like 225 pounds, 6'4". I mean, I we'll get to it later, but I was going over some like possible alternatives. And there's guys who are his same height that are like 40 pounds lighter in the league. So Dion is pretty unique. He's kind of doughy, but it helps for him when he switches.
Yeah, he's got the upper body strength is a massive advantage whenever you're switching, and he's got that. He's beefy. He's quick as well, and. Really, I think the biggest difference in the playoffs is that he wasn't playing like an idiot.
It's true.
Defensively or offensively.
Yeah, so I went back through just comparing his regular season stats to his playoff stats. And you look at it on offense, and in my mind, he was making like a ton of threes in the playoffs.
Right.
but if you actually go back and look at it, he actually was taking the exact same number of threes per game, mm-hmm. which was 3.1 attempts. He made 1.1 in the regular season, 1.2 in the postseason. So percentage-wise, it was 36% in the regular season, 38% in the postseason. So he really was – his three game was the exact same as it was in the regular season. The huge difference was the long twos. Mm-hmm. Not only was he taking less, they were 23% of his shots in the regular season, only 14% of his shots in the postseason. But he also was hitting a ridiculous 58% of his long twos in the playoffs compared to 33% in the regular season. And that is one thing that I do not think is sustainable.
But the shot that he kept making was a good shot. Like he'd step into it, and it was usually kind of near the free throw line, was kind of the shot that he kept nailing over and over again, and they just leave him wide open. And he wasn't stepping back. He wasn't dribbling a ton. Like, he just confidently stepped into it and took it. So, like, I feel like that shot is sustainable, but, like, the, end of the shot clock, I'm just going to dribble until I take a shot kind of thing. Like, obviously, like, he won't. And that's what he saw a lot in the regular season. Like, that was a lot of his long twos. Like, it felt like he was, like, early shot clock, step back, or, like, it was, like, end of shot clock, I'm just going to dribble until I have no more time kind of deal. But I felt like he had space. He was really confident, and he didn't fade away. He just looked really confident and stepped into it. And I think if he could do something like that, I think it would be a little bit more sustainable than what we saw in the regular season.
Yeah, and I think as far as, like, the shot choice, that is definitely sustainable. I just don't think he's not going to hit, like, 60% of his long twos, which are defined as, like, 16 feet to the three-point line. I mean, if he, like, actually got better at long twos, I could see him, like, topping out around 40% on those. But I'm not expecting him to – I don't know. I think there were some things about his playoff play that are unsustainable.
Yeah, but I think the most important thing, and we've already touched on that, was his defense. Like,
absolutely.
That's what makes him really hard to replace, because he is a guy that can hit an open three. He is a guy that can get hot from time to time, and he's not a guy that even this team really needs to count on for scoring, because they have scoring in so many other places. But the defense has to respect him, and he is also proven to be a really good defender. He's only 24, and I just don't know how you replace that player. I can understand how you can replace the player in the regular season. It makes sense. He gambled a lot. He got lost off ball. Solid man-to-man defense, but he just legitimately seemed lost. But he was a different guy in the postseason, and there's no reason to believe that is particularly unsustainable, because it was just like a mindset thing. It wasn't like he was just hot. And you look at his stats, like you said, his stats between the postseason and regular season aren't that different. He averaged pretty much the same, like, counting stats as he did in the regular season and in the playoffs. He had a little bit better shooting percentages. But like you said, it's just he was basically the same guy, just like a smarter role player version of Deion. That's really the only difference. If you're just looking at stats, like, you're not going to see a huge difference, and he's not going to look that great. But if you watch the games, like, he definitely passes the eye test as a guy that was really crucial for the Thunder.
Yeah, and the problem the Thunder are going to run into is that when you look at that Warriors series, there really were only six guys on that team that they could play confidently more than 20 minutes a game.
Right.
And one of those was Deion. And so if you're going to replace Deion, it's probably going to take multiple guys, because you need people who can, like, they can probably replicate his defense, like maybe Hustis, or they could probably go out and get another good defender. But all these defenders that they have are so bad offensively that, like, even though Deion isn't, like, a great offensive player, he's just good enough at a few things, like hitting open threes and doing a little bit of playmaking, which I thought was better in the playoffs. Yeah. He's still not converting at the rim, but he can get to the rim. He actually shot under 50% near the rim in the playoffs. But he can at least drive and, like, do something on offense other than just stand in the corner, which is what Robertson did for most of the regular season. So, yeah, it's going to be tough if they want to replace him.
Yeah. I mean, he does have some decent handles. He can drive and kick. He's shown that ability. And he's still improving as a player, obviously. This will be, as long as something crazy doesn't happen and Billy Donovan doesn't get fired, this will be like the first time that he's ever had a coach for two consecutive seasons. So there's development that's happening. He really fits in with his culture. He says he wants to come back. By all accounts, Sam Presti really wants him to come back. And it makes sense because of the way he played against the Warriors. Yeah, you could replace him with, like, Luke Mbamute, but, like, he's just going to be like another Robertson on the floor. And then if you find, like, a guy that can shoot well, like, you can say, oh, well, Anthony Morrow will just take his minutes. Well, like, Anthony Morrow can't play with the Warriors unless, I mean, there's actually really no lineup that's conceivable that he could play against the Warriors for a long stretch. So it's just hard. It's just hard just because he does have a unique skill set. Is he frustrating at times? Sure. But he's got a lot of really unique NBA skills that teams are looking for.
And so, he's got a lot of skills that are specific to what the Thunder need.
Right.
Even if he's not necessarily exceptional in any of them, he gives you just a little bit everywhere that if you don't have that player, he's certainly, that player isn't on their roster right now outside of Deion. So they'd have to go get someone. And as I'll show later, there's not a ton of options.
Yeah. And those guys cost a lot of money. And the Thunder aren't, as long as Kevin Durant comes back, the Thunder aren't going to have cap room to get that guy.
Yeah.
So the Thunder are just in a tight spot. In all this, I think like Sam Presti's done this to himself a few times where basically he's drafted so well and has had such good players on his team that are all so young and that are just going to come into these massive deals off of their rookie scale deals that it just puts him in a crunch. Like he has to make difficult decisions. And just judging by his track record, it's kind of a scary proposition. But he's put himself in this position again where he's just got so much young talent that he's not going to be able to pay everybody. Maybe he will for this next season, but it's just not going to be able to happen going forward.
Yeah, so all season I was trying to convince you that Deion shouldn't be re-signed on the basis of that he wasn't a good player.
Right.
obviously that didn't work. I didn't convince you.
No.
You actually went the other way and agreed to get a tattoo on your butt of his face. So obviously that wasn't very convincing. So now I've taken a different tactic. Now my tactic is we can't sign him or we have to do something else because OKC's cap situation is going to get very serious in the next year.
Right.
So let me tell you a few things, and then after I tell you all of them, you can tell me if you still want to sign Deion Waiters.
Okay.
So the cap for this summer, it's projected to be at $92 million with a $111 million luxury tax line. So currently, the Thunder have $65 million in guaranteed contracts for next season, and they have $44 million in cap holds. Now, one of those is $6 million for Randy Foy, which like, even if they wanted to keep him, they're not going to be paying him $6 million a year.
No.
So, but if you took the total of all of those, the guaranteed money, the cap holds, and the $3.5 million non-guaranteed deal to Anthony Morrow, they're at $114 million. So if they brought everyone back at those prices, they would already be over the luxury tax line. But like I said, they're obviously not bringing back Randy Foy for that much. So let's say you let Foy, Nazi Muhammad, and Anthony Morrow go. Now you've cut about $10 million off of that, so you're down about the $104 million range. And that's assuming that you're paying KD about $25.8 million one-year deal, and you're giving Deion about $12.8 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in that scenario, they still have three open roster spots that they have to fill.
Right.
And at that point, they would probably be about $7 million below the luxury tax line. And the reason why I keep bringing that up is because they were over the luxury tax line the last two seasons. So if they're over the luxury tax line again in this third season, that's going to trigger the repeater tax.
Wait, did they end did they end this current season over the tax?
Yes.
Okay, the Novak deal didn't get them under the tax?
No. Yeah, from what John Hamm told me yesterday on Twitter, this if they're over this coming season, that will be their third year in a row.
But it's at the end of the season, so like we don't have to like totally worry about.
They wouldn't have to pay it for this season.
This summer. Yeah, but I'm saying like it's when the season ends that they count it. So they can unload something at the trade deadline or something to get under if they needed to, if they wanted to.
Yes, they could. And the reason why that's so important is because you look at the contracts coming up next summer, and it seems obvious that even with the cap exploding, if they're going to keep Roberson, Adams, and Ibaka, they're going to be over the luxury tax line.
Right.
Even with the exploding cap. So if we already know they're going to be over the luxury tax line in two seasons, it's really critical that they stay under it for this season so that they don't trigger the repeater for that huge season when they pay all these guys. So that's at $12.8 million for Deion. So how do you feel about that number? I feel like that is kind of right in the realm of what people are thinking he might get.
I think the number makes sense for the kind of player that he is and the market itself. I just feel like at some point Sam Presti's like got to convince somebody to take a Danny Green type deal. I don't know if that's going to be Waiters. He's been very vocal about wanting to stay, and the Thunder are a very smart team, and they're going to have to convince somebody that, hey, like, this is a great team. Like, we have something really great going here, but we just can't pay you market value. I mean, Danny Green should be in Toronto right now making like $17 million a year. But he's not, because he made the choice to be a part of something bigger, part of this really great Spurs team. And the Thunder are going to have, at some point, like, that's going to have to happen. I don't know if it'll be Dion. I don't know if it'll be Adams or if it'll be Robertson or somebody like that. But if they're going to keep this team together, which is going to be kind of difficult and they may not be able to, but if they want to keep this going, keep this together, keep the continuity, somebody's going to have to step up and say, hey, I'll take a little less in order to be a part of this. So it'll be, I don't know if that's Dion. I think ideally you pay Dion $10 million, you know, kind of, you know, 4 years, 40, or even, you know, even 4 for 44 would be, I think that's close to what they offered Reggie Jackson. Something like that would be really ideal for the Thunder. But I know that obviously whenever they offered Reggie that contract, it was a different climate, the different tax and different cap, everything was different. But still, like, something like that seems fair for a Dion Waiters type player who you could say, like, you know, you proved it to us in the playoffs, but I feel like you still, there's just, I don't know if those habits are ingrained yet, so we're willing to offer you this much. And then is he going to go play the offer sheet game? And that's what Sam Presti addressed at his press conference, was when they go for the offer sheet, that's when things get complicated. And is it, if he goes to seek an offer sheet, not, I'm not sure what team that would be, but I'm sure that they can get some team to offer him more than what the Thunder are probably wanting to or willing to take. But if Presti can get to him before, explain everything on, you know, if you want to stay here, this is probably the parameters that we can stay in. So,
I think that's my huge worry, is that not only is this a summer where almost every team is going to have significant cap space, but it's also a summer where the crop of shooting guard prospects or wings just isn't that great.
Right.
I posted this list. So this is all of the free agent wings under 27, ignoring KD. And it's Chandler Parsons coming off a knee injury, Nick Batum, who you're going to have to give a max to, Evan Turner, Michael Beasley, who's Michael Beasley, Eric Gordon, who has a history of injuries, DeMar DeRozan, who you're going to have to give a max to, Kent Bazemore, who's probably in like Waiters realm in terms of what he might get paid, but he could get even more than that. Lance Stevenson, who is probably not going to have his contract picked up by the Grizzlies. Harrison Barnes, who's going to get a max. Alan Crabb, who's kind of also in that Waiters territory, but is going to get a lot of money. Jordan Clarkson is going to get a ton of money. Evan Fournier, a ton of money. Bradley Beal, probably max.
Yeah.
So, like, if you're looking for a cheap wing, like, even, and by cheap, I just mean, like, in the $10 to $12 million range, there really aren't that many guys there. And so, like, in what we would think in the $10 to $12 million range, it's basically like Dion and Alan Crabb, Kent Bazemore. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling all three of those guys are going to get overpaid, because there's just not, there's not enough guys to go around for the amount of money that's available.
Right. And that's them seeking the highest amount of dollars that they can get. And most guys, right. Do that.
They do. And it makes sense, because like Dion's only made, he's made $16 million in his career so far. It's possible he could get an offer sheet where he's making that per year.
Yes, that's very possible. I mean, like, with the money that's being thrown around and everybody's need for a guy that can play on both ends, like he fits that bill, which is kind of weird to say, but he does. And like I said, it's just going to come down to what he wants. Because Sam Presti is very well aware of what this team needs and the salary cap. Like, he knows about it all, and whether he's willing to match anything, I don't know. If somebody gives him the max, I mean, there's just no way. Like maybe they can have him for a season and then try to trade him after, you know, during the summer time or something. But like, there's just no way you can keep him and Cantor on max deals. There's just no way. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if Waiters is going to be the guy that's going to step up and say, I will take less because I want to be here, because I've had such horrible experiences, you know, in Cleveland. You know, I found a place that is home for me. I found a place that everybody accepts me. You know, he and KD are really tight. I don't know. I don't know if that's enough, if that's enough to keep him, because at some point, if the Thunder are going to be a sustainable franchise like the Spurs, they got to get to their guys first. And that's what the Spurs do. They get to all their guys first and they say, you know, give them a number and say, this is what we can do. And if you want to stay, this is what you'll take. And, you know, guys like Corey Joseph didn't take it, but then like guys who are even more important than Corey Joseph, like Danny Green, took it. And, you know, everybody's just mouth agape, like, I can't believe that the Spurs just did that. And wow, now they have LaMarcus Aldridge. Oh, now they, you know, get to keep Kawhi Leonard on a max contract. Now they have this incredible team and that nobody saw coming, because everybody really thought last summer that there's just no way they can do it all. Like, there's no way they can do it all. And they did it. And it's kind of crazy. And then they, you know, have David West take this like tiny contract. And I mean, you have to be able to manipulate outside of like what everybody's max value is at some point for everything to be sustainable.
Yeah. And it's wild looking back even one season at some of the contracts that were signed last summer, like Corey Joseph, I think he's making $7 million a year. It just seems like the hugest bargain.
Right.
When you realize we're paying like Kyle Singler just $2 million less. yeah. So if he gets a big offer sheet, like even let's say it's like 16,
That
bumps them up to now they're in like the $108 million range. Now they're only $3 million below the luxury tax, mm-hmm. with still three open roster spots to fill. And at that point, I personally, and I think we talked a little about this yesterday, I think that's when you start having to think about moving Enes Kanter.
Sure.
And it has to do more with who you can play against the Warriors. So regardless of how good Kanter looked against the Spurs, if they're only willing to play him 10 to 12 minutes against the Warriors, it's not worth it to be paying him $17 billion or whatever.
Right. But you also have to address that with saying that, would they have beaten the Spurs without him? Because that Spurs series is a lot tighter than what people are even saying. You know, like most of those games are really tight except for game six. And he played he played a crucial role, and they may not even be able to play the Warriors without him.
Yeah, but do you think it's harder to find his skills in the free agent market or to replicate Deion's skills if you had to choose between one?
I think if you have to choose, you have to go with Deion.
Because I think there are guys out there like Maurice Spates and Jordan Hill and John Luehr, or Cole Aldrich even, that you could bring in as kind of a big man off the bench. You're just telling him to like go out there and score.
I mean, but like none of those guys are even close to the skill set of Kanter. Not in the stratosphere.
Right, they're not.
What he can do. But I think it all also comes down to like what is ownership willing to do. Like. If ownership just gives the green light to Sam Presti, like, hey, dude, do whatever you want. Like, we didn't pay the tax for forever, and now we want to do it because we have a really good team, and Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook are in their prime. Like, let's just do it. And at that point, like, you just bring everybody back, right?
I guess.
I mean, the fact is that we just don't really know, like, what the orders are, because for years it was like get below the salary, like you need to get below the tax, and Presti found creative ways to do it year after year, and like most teams that are competing for a title are over the tax. Like most team, like I mean, look at what Cleveland is doing this year. Like they're, I mean, it's insanity what they're doing, and they still at the trade deadline like brought in Channing Frye, and they, I mean, like, and who knows what they'll do after the season, but they like they're paying a ton of money for their team, and if Clay Bennett and company are willing to do something like that, you know, for like I don't know how long they'd be willing to do that, 3 years or whatever it is, then maybe all of this is moot. But And then also you have the new CBA coming up, and that kind of complicates things. Like, what are the rules going to be? Like, are they going to change things on us? What's the repeater tax going to look like then? Or is that even going to exist? Or, I mean, like, it's hard. And you hate to be Sam Presti and make a move to get into the tax, and then new CBA hits, and the rules change, and like, oh, crap, like, we could have kept him instead of having Jordan Hill now. And that, I mean, it's just, that just really complicates things for OKC in that way.
And that's why I think they really need to make a focus to stay under the luxury tax, just because there's a big difference between what Cleveland's doing this year and what Cleveland's doing this year if they had to pay the repeater tax. Because if OKC next season, like two seasons from now, is paying like $2.50 per dollar over the tax line, I just don't think that's sustainable. Like, I don't care how rich those guys are. Like, that's just such an exorbitant amount of money if you really did bring everyone back at their market value, meaning like Adams, Ibaka, and Robertson.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it would.
So I do think they're going to have to make some decision.
Yeah. But do they have to make the decision for this coming 2016-17 season is the question.
Not if they can get Deion at a reasonable amount and that keeps them tax.
What's the max reasonable amount for you?
Honestly, I think his cap hold is like right there, 12.8.
Yeah. I think that price makes a ton of sense. I think obviously Sam Presti would like to get him under that, but I think that price per year makes sense. Could he get more? I don't doubt that he could get more, but that price does make a ton of sense, which is kind of strange.
And one other thing that I would like to see them do is just get back into the draft. This kind of goes along with the cap situation as well, because even though the cap is exploding, the rookie scale contracts are staying the exact same.
Right.
And one of the downsides of the Waiters and Cantor deal is that they only have one first-round pick over the next three seasons. And that's just cheap labor that they could get. Yeah. And this year, like, this year they have no picks. They have no seconds this year. They could potentially have 2 seconds next year because they have their own in Memphis's. But I really think they just, even though they have some guys in the pipeline, you know, with Cameron Payne and Josh Eustace and Mitch McGarry, I just think you need more of those guys just to see what happens with them. Because if one of those turns out well, then it just makes your cap situation so much easier.
Yeah, especially if they are going to clear out Morrow and guys like that. And also, like, if they can get Alex Abrines to come over and what that price looks like, are they able to get him for like the taxpayer mid-level where he's making like $3 million a year and they are able to pay, no one even knows what his buyout is, but if his buyout's like $1 million, the Thunder pay a little over half of that, he pays the rest and comes on over. Like, that'll be a big deal, because if they can get him for like 3 years, what, like 9 or 10 million or whatever it ends up being, like, that will be a huge value contract, along with the years that they have left with Eustace and with Payne. And I feel like if they can make that happen, I don't know that it really, I don't know where the guy who they draft is gonna would even fit in at that point. Just because they do have a lot of guys, but I do expect, and we were texting about this yesterday, there's a lot of teams that have multiple first round picks. Like, the Celtics aren't going to be able to sign everybody if they make all these picks. Like, it's just actually impossible for them to do that. So, like, they're going to have to do something. Like, they'll either consolidate the picks into something bigger, or they'll have to sell off a pick, or like trade it for a future pick or whatever it is. And, you know, the Thunder could get in that way. There's going to be a lot of ways to get into the draft this year because of the amount of multiple picks that teams have.
Yeah, Phoenix, Denver, and Boston all have 3 picks in the first round. And even if they wanted to take all those and use them on like draft and stash guys, I don't even know if there's enough draft and stash guys in this draft for them to be able to do that. Now, one other thing we talked about, which could come into play if the Thunder do need to move one of these contracts like Cantor or even a lesser guy like Kyle Singler, is that there's so much cap room. There's a lot of cap space to trade into, which could potentially work out for some teams. I mean, it's amazing to me how screwed OKC has gotten by the cap situation compared to other teams.
I know.
Yeah, they're just like, they're just like where they started, the year that they started drafting these guys, it's just been like the worst situation every single year.
Yep.
I mean, you look at a team like the Jazz, who I think have like 12 or 14 guaranteed contracts for next year. They're at like $57 million. They have all their important guys locked up except Gobert.
Yeah.
Like they could sign Gobert to a new deal like Steven Adams. And they just have all this cap room just because of when they drafted their guys. And same thing with Golden State. Like yeah, I was tweeting out the other day that it's possible that we could be paying Ennis and Deion more than they're paying for Draymond Green and Klay Thompson.
Right.
And it's just because of when those guys came out and when their deals were up. It sucks.
It's just luck. It's just all luck. And like
it is.
And it's like guys playing well at like the biggest thing for the Warriors is Steph Curry's contract, man. Like if he was playing like the Steph Curry that we know today at the time, like he gets maxed out and then they can't keep everybody.
Right.
But he's hurt, and you know, at the time that felt like crap, like this sucks, you know, we're still the really crappy Warriors franchise, and this guy who we took with a high lottery pick can't even stay on the court, so let's give him $11 million and just hope for the best. And here they are today. It's all luck. You know, you have, you know, Durant and Westbrook playing at their highest peak. You have, you know, Robertson like emerging as a guy that could actually make $15 million a year whenever his contract comes up. You can have Adams coming up who can make the max. You have Deion Waiters who just came out of nowhere as like this like really like good defensive wing. It's just all is coming into place like right at the time where it's like, sorry guys, like you almost none of you can take your market value and this team stay together. It takes incredible luck.
If a couple of those guys, like if Robertson had been a free agent last summer,
yeah,
we probably could have gotten him for like 4 years, $20 million or something. And we probably could have gotten Deion for like 4 years, 32 or something.
Right, exactly.
And yeah, it reminds me that what's happening with the Warriors reminds me of the Seahawks in the NFL, how like they drafted Russell Wilson in the third round. And so they were able to pay him super cheap for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
And just spend all their money elsewhere, whereas all these other teams in the NFL are having to give massive contracts to their quarterback. And you see the same thing with Steph Curry. Like, the best player on their team is making, you know, $11 million a year. He's making about as much as Danny Green.
Right.
And so they can spend this money everywhere else on their roster. And even when they're spending their money everywhere else, they're still getting deals.
Yeah.
It sucks.
Yeah. And for NBA players, it's all about playing well at the right time. And for the Thunder, all their players have played well at the right time. And that's really good for them. And it was good for this playoff run. Like during the playoffs, like you're not worried about it. Then afterwards, you're like, oh man, like Andre Robertson was good. Like that's not good. Like that's good for this cap situation. Like he hit shots. Like he's useful on offense. That is horrifying on so many levels. And at the cap, it's like really horrifying. I don't know. I mean, maybe they can still get to Robertson this summer and get an extension done. Maybe they can even get to Adams this summer and, you know, pull a Jonas Valanciunas, on him. Because it's kind of crazy that the Raptors were able to do that with Valanciunas, where he didn't get to restricted free agency because he would clearly get the max this summer, even though it's debatable whether he deserves it. He would get it. Maybe the Thunder can do something like that with Adams, or maybe he's the guy that's like, yeah, I don't care what I make. I just want to play on this team. I just want to have open dunks because I'm playing with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. But that's a pipe dream at best.
Yeah. So if Deion gets a max, let's say.
Yeah.
And OKC decides we can't do it.
Right.
So they let him go. I'm going to read you a list of eight names, because even in that situation, they wouldn't have a ton of cap space.
No, it'd be like a mid-level deal, right?
Yeah. So these are our options.
Okay.
And I looked for guys who were wings, usually in like their mid to late 20s, and could shoot from three, or at least have a history of shooting from three.
Okay.
So the first one is Etuan Moore.
Eh?
Played with the Chicago Bulls last year. He's 6'4". He's more of a backup point guard.
Yeah.
But but he is seen as a pretty good defender. He shot 45% from three last year. Problem with him is that he's 6'4", 191. He was the guy who I said he weighs like 30 pounds less than Dion.
Yeah.
So he's not going to be able to switch onto much more than a small two.
Not excited about each one more.
Okay, next, Gerald Henderson, my favorite. I bring him up all the time.
Yeah.
Had a nice season for Portland. He's 6'5", 215, shot 35% from three last year. He's 28 years old. I still like Gerald. I do think he's probably going to get a little bit more than a middle level, though.
Yeah, he could.
Because especially if Portland wants to bring him back, they have so much cap room that it really wouldn't make that much of a difference to them if they gave him like $8 million a year.
Yeah.
So then we go on.
I'd be happy if he could shoot a little bit better, because I don't think he doesn't have the floor game that Dion does.
Right. In terms of the bottom of the barrel, Matt Barnes would be available.
How old is Matt Barnes?
He is 36.
That's what I thought.
He's 6'7". 226. He only shot 32% from three last year. Is a pretty down year for Matt Barnes on multiple levels. yeah. And you probably don't want to. I mean, he's like the total opposite of what we think of as like a Thunder guy.
Right.
So that's probably not going to happen. But he is a really cheap option who can play defense and shoot threes.
And also, he closes the door on bringing Derek Fisher back to this franchise in any capacity.
That's true.
So he's kind of an asset. In a way.
Next one is Jared Dudley, another guy.
Alex, don't even do it. Like, you can't even say his name, can you?
He's top five small forward.
He's the best small forward in the league, like, just right behind KD. Like, what's the difference between him and KD? I don't know.
He didn't have a great year. Like,
he played for the
guy. Going back and looking at his stats, he was pretty good. He shot 42% from three.
Yeah.
He is 30. But he's one of those like great locker room guys. I feel like he'd be a nice transition from Nick Collison.
I mean, if we could, I mean, I would take him over Dion. I think that he would be perfect. I mean,
you think he's not going to get a ton of money?
Why not?
I just don't think he will.
Like, what's a ton of money?
Like, I think he'll get like, I could see him getting like the full mid level.
Man, I think he's going to get more than that, man. I think somebody will give him like 3 years, $30 million, at least.
Really?
Why not? He's a good role player. Like
because he has some pretty interesting injury history.
Yeah, but like that is like what? How has that deterred teams from in the past? Like you have Wes Matthews coming off his Achilles, and they're like, all right, $16 million a year. Like I mean, like that's you know, and he's 30. I just think that he's worth way more than that. Like, as you know, like the advanced stats, like say it all. Like he's
good. Oh yeah, I like him, but I just feel like he's perpetually underrated, and like everyone knows it, and still no one gives him like a big deal.
I mean, if they can get him for the mid level, even I mean I don't know how they do it, but if they could get the full mid level somehow by getting under and like, keeping Dion somehow, but in this scenario they couldn't. But if they could. I mean, that's a huge upgrade for the Thunder. That's a guy that can play against the Warriors. He can play four. He can play three. He's smart. He can shoot. He can play defense. Like I'm all in on that, but I just think he's going to make more than what you're imagining. I just think he's worth
more
than
that.
What about,
okay, I'll give you another option. A little bit cheaper, a little bit younger, Lance Thomas, blast from the past.
Oh, boy.
He's so 28, 6'8", 235, shot 40% from three out of nowhere last year.
Out of nowhere. That's the most horrifying thing about it. Is that?
But he does. His defense is pretty good.
Oh, I like him. I think that they should dump Singler and try to bring him back if they can.
And he feels like a guy you could get without spending an exorbitant amount of money.
But don't you think like people are going to see like what he did and just be like, oh. No, like I said, like 2 years, $20 million for Lance Thomas.
For Lance Thomas?
Dude, this summer's going to be weird. I'm telling you, it's going to be weird.
If Lance Thomas is getting $10 million a year, then Dion's getting a max.
I don't doubt that Dion could get the max. It just takes
some of these guys have to like fall through the cracks, though.
Somebody will. If Lance Thomas can fall through the cracks, great, bring him back. Because he can play on the perimeter, and he can be a small ball forward. Like, yeah, he can play against the Warriors. Like, that guy's good.
Okay, I got three more for you.
Okay.
Our crush from last season, OJ Mayo.
Oh, boy.
He's a free agent. He's 28, 6'5", 210, shot 32% from three last year, but that was a down year for OJ.
Yeah, it was.
He could bounce back. He's a reclamation project, probably not great on D, but maybe he gets in the Thunder system and turns it all around.
My idea of OJ Mayo is a lot different than the reality of him. I think he just kind of sucks. And he's not a Thunder guy at all.
I could definitely see him falling through the cracks, though.
He will fall through some cracks. Like
I have a feeling people have caught on to the OJ Mayo story.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see where he ends up. Isn't he just destined to be a king?
Yes, he is. Absolutely. Not only is he destined to be a king, but he's destined to play more minutes over Buddy Hield when they draft him.
Oh yeah, he's.
And people will just be pissed, and there'll be a free buddy hashtag started.
I can't wait for this storyline to play out because it feels so real.
Okay, two more guys. 28-year-old, 6'7", 215, Mr. Wes Johnson.
I hate him as a replacement for Waiters because he doesn't do anything that you want him to do. I mean, but if he's your minimum guy on the end of the bench, like, that's fine. If he replaces Randy Foy, that's fine.
Yeah, I think he's more playable against the Warriors than some other guys just because his length and
he does
have I feel like one out of every 20 games he just has an insane game where he'll hit four threes and get a couple blocks. And
what did he
really
shoot
good.
From three this year?
He shot 33%.
Yeah.
So he's kind of just good enough to let him shoot from there.
Yeah, I mean, I think he'd be fine as a flyer guy on the end of your bench. But if you're asking him to replace the production of Dion Waiters, I just think there's just no chance.
And it kind of sounds like with all these guys, if you would have to replace Dion, you'd probably need at least two of these guys just to have more bodies to put out there.
Yeah, if you could give me, if you could give me Jared Dudley and Utuan Moore, yeah, let's do that. Let's do both of those at cheap deals and move on from Dion. As much as I love Dion Waiters, I just think that is a better team for the Thunder. I just don't think that they're going to be able to do that with the amount of money they have. I just don't think I don't know that you can get two of any of these guys for the amount of money that they have.
What about, this is my last one, he's only 25. It's not Lance Stevenson. 25, he's 6'7", 225 pounds, shot 32% from three last year. Solomon Hill.
I thought about him. What? I have no idea what to think about what kind of contract he's going to get. I have no idea.
Yeah, because the Pacers just kind of decided to not pick up his option. Is that what happened, or did they just let him go?
No, they didn't pick up his option, which is so weird. I just don't even... I don't understand. And in this climate, I just don't get not just keeping him, just having him as a trade chip or whatever. I don't get it. I mean, maybe he's a problem in the locker room or something that I have no idea about. But I thought about him. I think that he would be. I mean, he's a youngish player who has length and athleticism and can shoot sometimes. I mean, that's a guy definitely worth taking a flyer on, but asking him to be a replacement is too much to ask, probably.
Right, and I think the reason I like him is that he does have some positional versatility. This year on the Pacers, he played 13% of his minutes at shooting guard, 59% at small forward, 28% at power forward. So he is a guy you can switch between the wing positions, and he's young. And you kind of just hoping that he falls through the cracks and you can scoop him up and maybe he flourishes like a Lance Thomas or someone.
Yeah, no, I think that he's going to be well worth it. I just think that some of these guys are just some of these guys are going to get dumb contracts.
Yeah, it's going to be really hard to judge contracts this summer. while also knowing that it's impossible that every contract this summer is just good because there's so much money around. Like, who cares? Like, there's going to be bad contracts this summer.
Yeah.
But we're not going to know. It's going to be hard to judge them.
Oh, it's been really hard even the past few years. Because, like, a few years ago, like, a bad contract, like, today is like, oh, well, that's, like, Channing Frye. Like, Channing Frye's contract a few years ago was like, Orlando is crazy. Like, they're high and crazy, and they didn't even know what they were doing. They didn't know who this guy was. They just threw a ton of money at this guy. And now, like, today, it's like, oh, well, Cleveland's got a value deal in Channing Frye, you know? I mean, we have to address that fact, too, because the cap is going to bump up again. So, like, contracts that everybody's like, whoa, like, that's stupid. Like, could in 2 years be like, wow, like, you know, it's really good that the Thunder signed so-and-so to this three-year deal because now they have a rotation player that, you know, is making, like, you know, whatever, 10% of the cap. It's a great deal. But it's just hard to – it's just going to be really hard to tell because, like, judging anything off, like, an immediate – anything immediate in the NBA is always, you know, that's tough. Like the draft or free agency or whatever. Like, you know, the Kyle Singler's deal didn't seem that bad last year, but you know, just the years on it, just feel like he's going to be on the Thunder forever and not contributing anything. But yeah, I just think it's hard. I just think honestly, like if the Thunder, like if their goal is to compete with the Warriors, unless they can get Jared Dudley on a cheap deal, I think keeping Deion is the best option that they have just because he's a guy that can literally, I mean, he played Steph Curry. He, you know, was able to, you know, keep Draymond Green from scoring in the post. He can really play any of those guys 1 through 5 on the death lineup. And that's what you have to have. The same with Robertson. And then, you know, Durant can do that and Russ can do that. And Ibaka can do, like, you just have to have those guys. And if they can add one more, so that they don't have to play everybody to just exhaustion, like that would be great. Like, and they may already have it on their team. Like Josh Eustis, as much crap as that guy's been given over the past few years, like he could fit that mold as a guy who can come in and play 15 minutes a game and not give up anything because he can play defense and maybe he'll hit a three, and maybe he won't, but still the ability to switch is big. And I think that he's at least fits like the prototype of a guy that could do that.
Yeah, when I think about their bench or like the guys coming through the pipeline, mainly like Payne, McGarry, and Eustis, I actually feel the best about Eustis in terms of being able to play against the Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm still worried about, well, I still don't think McGarry is going to be able to play against the Warriors. And
no.
The same thing with Payne. I just don't know if Payne's going to grow enough as a defender in the next year.
Yeah.
Because he seems to be so slow moving laterally. Guys just get by him whenever.
Yeah, I think some of that may just be like the game, like the I was talking about how the game is so fast in the NBA, and like as the game slows down, like things get easier. Because he's an athlete, like the dude's athletic. Like I don't think that it's like a lack of mobility, like a Anthony Morrow. I think it's like he's a rookie. He didn't really play all that much this season, and you know he didn't play summer league last year. So I just think that he's going to get. I believe in Cameron Payne. I think that guy's going to be really good. And if he can just come in and play 10 minutes a game in the Western Conference Finals, like that changes everything. If he can just be passable during that time and not get killed, which I think is possible. I don't know if it's going to happen next year or the year after that, but I do think that he's a guy that they believe in. And maybe you add him and Josh Eustis into the rotation, and then you have more of like a 8-man rotation that works rather than your – basically six. And you also have to consider like Mitch McGarry as a replacement for Cantor if they feel like they can't keep this team together or if they have to get under the tax. Like, you know, McGarry, he doesn't do the same things that Cantor does, but he's a guy that could be a guy that can shoot the ball from deep. He's a good passer. He can handle the ball way better than Cantor, really any big man. He's a guy that has a ton of potential. He's an energy guy, rebounder. Like he could come in and not do exactly what Cantor did, but he could come in and play valuable minutes if they do. And that's the value of keeping, like you talked about the value of having these rookies. Like that's the value of McGarry at this point. Like we know he's not going to play next year if they bring everybody back, but if they do get into a numbers crunch and they have to deal somebody, then you have depth behind him at least. So it's kind of...
Yeah, I think we both agree that they can't go into the Western Conference Final next year with only six guys that they really feel like they can play more than 20 minutes.
No, and
because
they... Yeah, go ahead.
The margin for error in that case is just so small.
Yeah.
Because even if like Roberson goes out with an ankle sprain, like they're dead. Like who are you bringing in to defend?
Right. That's where you have to like the development of Josh Huestis this summer and training camp is so crucial. And I mean if they can just get rid of Singler, great, but the rehabilitation of Kyle Singler is also a really big deal because he was supposed to be a guy that could play in that series.
Right,
he fits the bill. He's a tall guy. He's supposed to be able to shoot. He's supposed to be able to switch, but he just couldn't shoot. And when you can't shoot, and he hustles, but he's not like a plus defender. But if he could have shot the ball well, then he would have been a guy that could play. And maybe he can rediscover that because he's a guy that did that for a few years in Detroit. But if he can rediscover that, great. If not, like they need to find a spot for him, like send him to Portland, like send him back to Oregon and see if like the Blazers will take him because they're so far under the salary floor. But
right. Yeah.
So basically if they can get him at like $12 million range, I think that's a comfortable spot for the Thunder and for Waiters. But anything above that, I think is really just going to come down to what ownership is telling Sam Presti. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, what ownership is telling Sam Presti and what their feelings are about Cantor. Like if they want to move him in that situation, like if they take Deion over him or if mm-hmm. they even think he'd be movable. Because you and me were trying to find deals for Cantor and it's not easy.
yeah. I mean it's first of all just finding a team that will take him. I mean, that's right. His skill set is valuable. Like, it's proven very valuable for the Thunder this season. But not many people want to pay a big guy that really, I mean, like, in most cases, he just can't be your starting center. Like, he just can't if you're going to have a shot at being a decent defensive team. So it's a tough fit. It's a tough way to try. Like, the trade that you suggested with the Celtics was a Jerebko and Amir Johnson, who are both non-guaranteed deals, just basically dump him off on the Celtics, and they. But then, like, what if do the Celtics really want Cantor? Like, he can't really start for them, but he probably would be their best big man at that point.
My only thought there was their fascination with Julia Okafor for whatever reason.
Yeah,
because I think Cantor and Okafor are very similar. And I actually think that Cantor is better than Okafor, and he's always going to be a better rebounder than him and has a similar value in terms of his post game.
Yeah.
And I think they're both terrible defensively. They're both
if those rumors are true, then that does make sense. Yeah.
Right. And they're talking about maybe giving up their third pick for Okafor, and mm-hmm. I just think they could get a guy like Cantor for a lot cheaper, giving up less assets.
Yeah. And then, like, honestly, like, the Thunder could play both those guys and go ahead and guarantee their deals. Because I don't know that much about Jerebko's ability to switch on the smaller guys. I couldn't tell you. But I do know Amir Johnson would be a valuable guy off the bench for the Thunder that can play defense and can, you know, get buckets now and then. He doesn't replace what Cantor does, but... he's at least able to be a better defender than Cantor. But it's still hard to say, like, if he, you know, took his place in the Spurs series, whether the Thunder would have won or not. But
right.
But yeah, it's some tough decisions ahead for the Thunder. Alex, thanks for coming on the podcast today. We can follow you on Twitter at AlBabyCakes. You can follow us at DTD Podcast. Please leave an iTunes review if you have time, if you listen to this podcast. Weekly, please leave a review. 5 stars. We would really appreciate it. And we will have our Friday pod tomorrow. So if you're listening to this on another day, we'll do another big podcast where we're going to break down more Thunder stuff and talk about the finals and talk about the draft and everything. So listen in for that, and we will talk to you guys soon.
Thanks for listening to the Down to Dunk podcast. You can find us at dailythunder.com and downtodunk.com. Follow us on Twitter at DTDpodcast and ask us Twitter questions every Wednesday. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Give us a 5-star iTunes review, and your review will be read on the next podcast. Thanks for listening.